are listening to Teacher Talk It, supporting teachers, parents and students worldwide. www.teachertalkit.co.uk. Like, subscribe and follow to stay in the know.
Graphic organisers are like cartography for the mind. Mm-hmm. These internal maps that we have, and we try to externalise them to make sense of what we're thinking. And
we help teachers thrive and survive with classroom ideas, cutting-edge school resources, and research-informed teacher training materials. You will also hear discussions on the policy, guidance, and research-based publications.
This week, listen to Ross McGill, founder of Teacher Talkit, interview David Roger Goodwin, geography teacher, head of year 10 and 11 at a secondary school in Lincolnshire, and very soon to be author. In today's podcast, some of the things we'll be discussing are what graphic organisers are and the divided opinions about them, teaching geography in the modern age, and being ahead of year during the pandemic.
Hello everyone, this is Ross at Teacher Talk at the most influential blog on education in the UK. Today I am delighted to be talking to David Roger Goodwin. David, hello, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Could I first of all get you to introduce yourself to our listeners and tell everybody what you do?
So, yeah, my name's David Goodwin. I'm currently head of year 10 and year 11 at secondary school in Lincolnshire. I'm a geography teacher and I'm currently, well, just finished writing a book that's due to be published in September, co-authored with Oliver Capigioli.
Fantastic, how exciting. So we got in touch because one of my past podcast guests, Kat Howard, in one of the questions which I'll be asking you, who would you recommend I interview next and why? So I'm going to sow that seed, you've got an answer. But she recommended you, and that's why we're here. So let's start with that awkward question. Why do you think she recommended you?
I think, if I remember rightly, because of my northern accent, but she did politely go on to say about my knowledge of graphic organisers, and at the time we'd been doing a little bit of work together on one or two bits, and been trying to visually capture some of their ideas and thinking, and helping her to make sense of it.
So let's go straight to the top. For people that don't know and people that are listening, what is a graphic organiser?
So a graphic organiser, most commonly, people would be familiar with things like mind maps, concept maps, possibly maps in a fishbone diagram, something like brainstorming, that sort of activity before. So that essentially is what a graphic organiser is. They go by lots of different terms, so terms like visual tools, semantic organisers have been used. Mm-hmm. And through what Man and Oliver's work, we kind of arrived at our own title, which is Weird Diagram. And we arrived at that because really what helps users of Weird Diagrams, graphic organisers, what helps them is not the visual element, and no visuals actually need to be present in order to really extract the true value out of them. And we kind of argue in our book that actually it's the visuospatial aspects of using such tools that really has the power and the potential to help people make meaning.
Mm-hmm. Now, I understand all the pedagogical terms that you've used, but could we break it down even further for maybe a parent listening? I didn't understand anything David said. Could you say it maybe a bit simpler?
Yeah, so I think really, I mean, when we using graphic organisers, what we're looking at is really a tool to help students when it comes to things like reading, mm-hmm. writing, and really help them to not become overwhelmed and not to become overburdened with complex thinking. And it's putting thought into the world and making sense of ideas because they're visibly in front of us. And it allows us to organise them as a result of that, rather than trying to do all of that internally within our mind, which can be very challenging even for the most intelligent and most academic of people.
Okay, so let's ask the question, why did you get interested in it?
So for me, I did an A-level in graphics, so I always kind of had that background as someone that was interested in how visual thinking and visual tools might be able to help learning. I'd done quite a little bit of work myself, just using things that I'd found from the learning scientists and people like Oliver. I'd been bouncing ideas backwards and forwards with Oliver for quite some time, and I put the idea together that maybe we try to explore further. Mm-hmm. And it's one of his earlier books, IQ, that really showed me the potential for the use. I think one of the things that I see a lot on places like Twitter is people sharing examples of their fantastic work. But at the time when I started suggesting to Oliver that we should look at working further on this, there was very little conversation around actually the process, and it was more about the product. And there was very few people other than Oliver really, really talking about actually how these graphic organizers are really tools, and this is how we can use them to serve the learning process. And that's one of the kind of key messages and themes in the book. Graphic organizers aren't the learning, they are a servant and they are a part of the learning process. And we make it very explicit how teachers can really use them in a manner in their classroom.
So when's the book out?
September the 6th, I believe, is the official publication
September
date.
The 6th. And without maybe stating an obvious question, what's the book title?
It's called Organise Ideas, Thinking by Hand, Extending the Mind.
Organising Ideas. Right, we'll come back to that. So thank you. That's a great introduction. Now, what I do with all my listeners is we do a little kind of backstory. So let's start off with, what were you like at school, 16 years old?
I mean, I felt like I probably went under the radar a little bit. I did go to a rather large secondary school, and I probably needed more pushing than I got. It wasn't really until I kind of got to college and university that I became truly motivated, I'd say. So I probably went under the radar. I wasn't bad, but I think I could have probably done better at the time.
Can I assume that your homework was always late, or am I being a bit unkind?
Possibly a little unkind. It probably wasn't late, but probably wasn't to as a higher standard as I expect my students.
When did the "I want to be a teacher" conversation start to emerge?
In university, I think that was really when I started to think about, this is. And I had a couple of friends at the time that were also having the same sort of ideas and thinking, and it sort of kind of spiraled from there, really.
How did geography happen?
I just always had an interest in it. I was just always interested at school, and I've started to think about this a lot more just recently when starting to work with graphic organizers, and graphic organizers are like cartography for the mind. Mm-hmm. And these internal maps that we have, and we try to externalize them to make sense of what we're thinking and to really look at different ways in which ideas connect. And it's the same with sort of map reading. I remember, like, when I was really young, and my mum at the time, we'd make long journeys to my auntie's house. We used to have an old road map. I used to be sat in the passenger seat helping my mum.
Oh yeah, I loved doing that too.
Like the AA maps, navigating from Grimsby all the way to Winchester.
I love doing that too. It's a bit shame it's all on a device now. That kind of physical experience has lost somewhat, isn't it? Now the Google just tells you which way to turn.
Absolutely.
So what's your favourite part about teaching geography today then? You know, kind of what's the state of the subject today? What are its strengths? What do you like about it? What are the frustrations?
The thing I don't enjoy teaching, I think... The thing I enjoy most about it is really bringing to the forefront how different concepts and ideas are connected. It's such a richly connected subject, and there's a real sense of satisfaction when the kind of penny drops for students, and they can see how the individual pieces of the puzzle sort of interconnect. Currently, I think the sort of big topic of conversation, especially since Mark Enns, the purpose of the geography curriculum, and how sort of like public government policies and public ideologies might be shoehorned into the geography curriculum because there's possibly nowhere else for it to go, and the idea of around decolonizing the curriculum. So there's a lot of exciting work going on, and I think the geography community, not to be biased on Twitter, the geography community is fantastic. Like, it's and really, so,
How did the head of year stuff happen?
It's a strange one. Like, I'd been head of faculty in my previous school, and I'd done that for a number of years. I was in charge of geography, I was in charge of history as well, and an opportunity to move to the school that I'm at now and to work under a previous head. And it was such an exciting opportunity in terms of the school, but then also I just felt like the time was right to try something different and broaden my skill set and how just to you know, add more strings to the bow, if you like. And it's a different sort of challenge. It's one that does excite me. It's one that at times frustrates, but the young people.
Yeah, no, I was just going to ask, you know, being ahead of year is a tough job at the best of times. So what's it been like during COVID?
So I think I am fortunate in that it is a fantastic, very well staffed. So in our pastoral team, we are well staffed and have a large staff body. It's been challenging insofar as the very early stages, trying to make sure that we made every single student. We learnt lessons early on and put into place new steps and new procedures, which have really served as well. More time spent online has been a difficult thing for students to transition to. So we've probably encountered more things that students have found challenging in terms of not just working remotely, but also their social time. And that's been challenging. But, you know, again, we are, you know, we've learned from that, as I suspect most schools have. But I think really nurturing, one of the things I was really keen for when students came back, especially this time around, was about them reconnecting. A lot of talk in the press and in the media about catch funding. From my point of view, I just wanted to see young people reconnecting face to face, getting opportunities to do things that they haven't done, extracurricular activities, for example, and having the benefit of actually person. And
yeah,
I think that for me, and I think a lot of young people, I think it was, I can't mention this, but there was a lovely blog about how young people have made, whether knowingly or unknowingly, have made a lot of sacrifice over the last year, that their education.
Yeah,
and what
they have. I mean, I can only talk about my son and even my dog. Actually, she's started to socialise with other dogs on dog walks. But my son's still a bit nervous to go out and do normal things. So those socialising skills, you know, if I think back to the start of the pandemic, some of the things that I was doing or thinking at that time compared to now. I guess it was that fear initially. But yeah, it's been a very challenging time. Now, we know workload is a problem for teachers at the best of times also. And I've been fascinated with teacher workload for a decade now. Let me unpick two things. What's the workload issue for teachers right now during COVID? So, you know, context June 2021. And what's your workload headache as a head of year?
So, workload headache at the moment, I suspect for most people, is probably going to be about how do you make up for lost learning in whatever. I think no matter how good your remote learning provision has been, in my opinion, I still don't think that inevitably there will be some attainment gap that's the attainment gap will have widened. So I think there'll be a lot of pressure on a lot of people to address what are you going to do about that. I fear some of the things that are coming out now at government level are probably knee-jerk reactions. So the idea around summer school and extending the school day and extending or shortening lunch times, they all appear to be knee-jerk reactions. And that's just me gleaming from the Twitter community and people I speak to. In terms of my workload, it really as a head of year, it really does vary. My busiest spell, I suspect, in terms of where the just finished up, so they're having the tag process, dealing with things like, so I'm in charge of things like organising the school prom.
So again, just what's TAG, just for people that are maybe listening outside of education?
The teacher assessed grades.
Grades. So the difference for the traditional exam method.
Yeah. So and I know that's been a huge piece of work for every person in education at all levels. Teachers bringing together that evidence, checking that the evidence is robust in case next week students are called and work is expected to be provided in terms of evidence for them. So, and then as I said, my sort of workload varies. It can change very, very quickly because young people, how young people are and the days that they're having can change very, very quickly. So
they certainly can. So what looks like a busy day on your timetable can be days or weeks of safeguarding chasing up, isn't it? And I hope you've got some people to support you with that. So let's switch back to graphic organisers. And let's think about, I guess a question to pose is, do you think opinion is divided on them? And if so, why?
I do. And I'm really happy you've asked me this. I do think it is. I don't think there's a doubt that people think the work. I don't think that's an issue. I think the biggest problem that them is, again, product versus the process. So we have, again, lots of people sharing ideas, all with the right intentions, but very few people talking about actually how they've been used. And then on the flip side of that, a lot of good work. So people like Ferrella and Mayer, Learning as a Generative Activity, a fantastic book. It identifies the boundary conditions of using them. So things like the time to construct and the difficulty to construct. And that can be off-putting to teachers. And that can be a reason why some people don't want to engage in them. We then have to factor in icon gate, as we've termed it. So the use of noun project and teachers just slapping an icon, that's tool coding or, this is my graphic organizer. And, that was never really, that's not really how they're intended to be used. And again, it goes back to I think everyone has the right intention. Everyone just, we engage in the education community outside of our own school because we just want our students to do well. And we don't always get it right as teachers and strategies that are supposed to work. We might use them incorrectly, but I'd like to think most teachers learn from that. So I do think the opinion is divided for a variety of reasons.
Yeah, it goes back to that theory and practice. You've got the theory, it becomes popular or it looks quite elusive, all these nice images, and then we stick on an icon and I think it's the practice, but it's not in itself. And, you being a graphic expert or qualified in that area like myself, the process of mind mapping and its place and importance and how it's used is a particular, this is why I've always said, every subject, including design technology, without kind of going into too much details, my friends used to take the mickey saying you're doing a paper mache degree, but the detail and theory of design knowledge as a kind of explicit subject domain and how these images can be used to design great products, communicate through visuals, etc. You'll know all that. So I guess the question is, I'm doing a bit of my own reading and research on memory, and I'm using one of the stories I always talk about is the volcano Mount Vesuvius in Naples, which destroyed Pompeii. So if we use that as an example, how would you, being a geography teacher, teach volcanoes using a graphic organizer?
So I'd have a few steps. So the first thing is this. There are different types, and the different types are determined by the nature of the content. So, for example, if I wanted to teach the process of a volcanic eruption, I would choose a graphic organizer that would best depict a sequence. So, step one, step three, step four, etc. If, for example, I wanted to look at different types of volcanoes, the different characteristics, the different features, I wanted to classify information, I'd use a map use a graphic organizer that was designed for classifying. So there are four different types, and the four types closely, well, they are based around different nature of how information is delivered to us. So we have information that is chunked, defined, classified, mm-hmm. categorized. It's that sort of language. We can compare information. We can draw comparisons and similarities. So we have organizers compare. Then we have mm-hmm. sequence organizers, and then we have cause and effect. So my first step, if I'm going to use one, is to pick the right tool for the job. And mm-hmm. the reason they are the right tool for the job is because the structure and the visuospatial relationship between the ideas that are contained on the organizer served by that tool. It's a bit like, and Oliver a lot on his courses, it's a bit like saying my favorite tool is a chisel. It's yeah. just such a silly thing to say, because a chisel is not going to be useful if you're going to try and drill and put a shelf up, for example. So the tool, the selection of the tool is the most important thing to begin mm-hmm. with. That's my first step.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's really interesting and fascinating. I guess, switching back to the workload issue and the importance and the research behind sketchnoting, if we bring it back to yourself, practically speaking, how do you reshape your resources? And is it a workload issue? How do you avoid icon gates? How do you translate your PowerPoints into nice mind mapping sequences to teach the volcano? And, and I'm throwing a lot of questions at you here. What does that resource look like for the kid on their table?
So workloads, the more, obviously, like anything, the more you use these things, the easier it gets. There is nothing stopping, and here we go, look.
Yeah, very good. So okay. For people listening, we can see a little graphic organizer on our screen. Describe that to listeners, David.
So this essentially is this was me preparing for my podcast with Ross. And what I decided to do was simply just, I had all these ideas going through my head and I wanted to chunk them together. So there's a clear hierarchy of knowledge. We start off generic in the middle, and ideas get more specific as we kind of branch out from the center of the mind map. So I suppose my point in showing this is that can be done by hand. That's mm-hmm. the first thing. If you've got a visualizer, and I prefer square paper myself, just because you've got almost like, well, you've got a grid. So in terms of actually sketching it out, it becomes easier. Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of, like, if we go back to the workload argument, I think one of the issues, if teachers are unsure about workload and how to create these, and they're one of the sort of objections or concerns is the time to construct them, you can very quickly create these in PowerPoint just by simply inserting a few text boxes and using arrow connectors between
boxes. You maybe have a simple template that you could reuse again and again.
Yeah, absolutely. Once you've created a couple, you do have templates that you can use and replicate and simply copy and paste things. And I have done a couple of short videos just demonstrating and how I do it. So I do fully understand what people's objections, but I think I wouldn't expect any teacher to go, "Oh, right, I've seen this strategy and by tomorrow I'm going to be using them in every lesson," because they don't need to be used every single lesson. And you build up that bank of resources over a period of time. And once you have created one, two, you've got a template for future endeavors in use. Now, in terms of what my students get, mm-hmm. it depends upon their experiences with them previously. It also depends on if I know, for example, a student is going to struggle to draw by hand an organizer, I'll put together a template for them. And how I do that is, once I've created my own, I simply duplicate the slide and then I go through and I just delete all the text. And then I've got myself a perfect template for any student that needs that. And then the focus, actually, because I think another concern is it detracts because of how difficult they can be or the time it can take to construct them. Some teachers might feel apprehensive and think, well, actually, actually just spent trying to figure out how to draw an arrow and a line and a box. Well, you know, you can mitigate that immediately just by simply creating a template. And it's very simple to do. So what it looks like for the student depends on their learning propensities and where they are in terms of their experience of using them.
Context is key. Absolutely. So as a pedagogical approach, I will assume that you can use this strategy in any secondary subject as a teacher?
Yeah, I think there's some... Because one of the things we've done with the book is we have over 50 teacher examples, which it's just... We put out on Twitter, you know, different subjects, different phases. Please share your examples, because a concrete example is better than just mm-hmm. me and Oliver saying this is what you should. So lots of different examples in the book. I think the areas where we've probably struggled the most to get examples was MFL. Maths, we have had some really, really good examples, in particular around how of processes is mapped out and how that can be used as a scaffold to help students and then gradually fade that scaffold in and take that scaffold in a way that really do lend themselves well to geography. We've got mm-hmm. some fantastic English examples as well in the book. So, yeah, I've seen good examples for every subject.
And how is your kind of knowledge or expertise as it's growing being used in your own school with staff training and that kind of technique being used as a strategy more widely?
Yeah, so last January was kind of like I did a CPD session just prior to the first lockdown, almost mm-hmm. as an introduction to the idea of graphic organising. We've had a big push in our school on metacognition, and at the time I didn't really fully appreciate how well connected graphic organizers and metacognition really are.
Mm-hmm.
So as the year went on, unfortunately, obviously we had COVID, we came back in September, I did another staff CPD session, and then set up a working party, a working group, where one representative from each faculty came to a meeting once every half term and would look at different strategies. One, mm-hmm. use of graphic organisers, and then more recently around how graphic organisers and some of the sort of other paired techniques and strategies that we propose can be used to help things like reading,
mm-hmm.
vocabulary practice. So that, you know, that's kind of where we're up to at the moment. And yeah. it's been great. As you walk around the school, you see some really great examples.
I guess the key question is, do you think it's making a difference to standards?
I mean,
obviously ready to tell.
I'm going to be biased, but I do, and I think without people really seeing a great example, one of the kind of early ideas I had was, it was with me year 11, September. I had this idea that I wanted my students, explicit to my students, how what we were currently learning about was linked to what we've learned previously. So I was looking at development and stages of development and where countries are. And I wanted to show to students how some of the concepts we were learning were linked to previous topics. So we started off with just a simple table. And the first column was just about retrieving basic knowledge of what we've covered in the past 2 to 3 weeks. And the next column was studied tectonic hazards. How is what we've learned in tectonic hazards, how's that linked to this? And I modelled and demonstrated that. And then we looked at another topic and then another topic. We ended up with four topics worth of retrieved information. But what I felt wasn't going to really materialise here was, yes, students could make the link between what they've learned previously to what they're learning now, but what they would have failed to have seen is all of the other interconnected relationships across the topics. So we produced a concept map, and at the end of it, and I demonstrated to students how the concept map that created could be used as a piece of writing. So your concept lacking all the nature, each branch of your concept map is a paragraph. And almost if you follow your concept map class, what you'll notice is each noun and connecting there helps to create a series of mini sentences.
Yeah. So I'm starting to imagine your classrooms a bit like those classic teacher photographs where you're in front of the board and it's covered in illustrations. Is that right?
I mean, there's a little going on because I don't want any distractions, but there's a whiteboard. And one of the things I stopped doing a lot of was making electronic organizers and the more complex ones I do, but a lot of kind of by hand and showing students how to do it because
under a visualizer or on the board.
Yeah. Under a visualizer. And I won't deny it, it's an investment in time, but I fail to see and want students to finish this concept map activity. Mm-hmm. I fail to see any other way I could have got the level and of interconnected relationships between these ideas. I failed to see how any other strategy could do that. And I stand by that. And I was watching Ben Ranson at the weekend present at Research at Rugby, and he's a geography teacher and he uses them as well. Similar sort of thing, just really showing how big ideas and concepts are linked across the curriculum. And I can't see retrieval practice, low stakes quizzing, multiple choice questioning, all fantastic strategies, but fail to really help students connect and link ideas together.
And I think that's the crux of it, isn't it? Those connections. So, David, I'm going to have to interrupt us because we've gone well over my 20-minute barrier here because we've got really absorbed by the topic, and that's probably my fault. And I hope listeners will appreciate it. But if you're familiar with my podcast, you may know that I then have a little bit of a quick quiz at the end, and I don't know if you're old enough to remember Timmy Mallett and that type of approach, but I haven't got the hammer to hit you on the head, and we're doing this virtually, but let me just start off with something easy. If I came to Grimsby, you know, post-pandemic, where would we go? What would we do? What would be the highlights of the town?
Well, we'd have to go for fish and chips because it'd be wrong not to. So we'd have to go for fish and chips and probably to what they claim to be the world's smallest pub by the old steam railway.
All right, sounds fantastic. What a great day out. Hopefully I'll get a job there in Grimsby soon. I'll be your way. What project are you working on at the moment? What's on your desk?
So I'm currently illustrating some ideas and concepts in Michael Chow's new book, which is it's called The Sweet Spot.
Sweet Spot, yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah. So I'm currently just bringing to life some of his ideas and concepts in his book.
Okay, and is your book ready to go itself?
It sure is. Yeah, it's finished. It's with the publisher at the moment, John Catt, and on course for September the 6th.
And people listening can buy that now on Amazon, can't they?
They can. Yes, it is available. Well,
fingers crossed for you. What's on your teacher desk today?
On my teacher desk today is my visualizer, and if I recall rightly, is my visualizer exercise book where we've just been finishing explaining how tropical storms are formed.
Okay, fantastic. What book are you reading for fun?
Everywhere I get to read. Well, I'm going to take that back. Yeah. All of the books I read are for fun. But I'm starting to get a pile of books mounting up, and this just arrived today. So I'm looking forward
Curriculum
to
by Ruth Ashby. Yeah, I've spotted that. Yeah, I've got a copy myself.
Looking forward to getting stuck into that.
What would be your piece of advice, your number one piece of advice for a teacher that's, you know, we hear all the time, I'm not good at maths, and we'll also hear, I'm not good at drawing. So what's your piece of advice for that teacher that wants to try a bit of hand drawing, knowledge organizer type stuff? So graphic organizers.
I would say best piece of advice is to engage with what's out there. Have a look at what's out there. Engage with the education community. So many people out there are willing to help and support and share ideas with each other. In terms of if you're not very good hand drawing, I have a few strategies. Square paper, because you get a grid which allows you to kind of help plan it. Sticky notes are if you're going to produce something quite complex, sticky notes, because you end up concept on each sticky note becomes easy to manipulate and organize. And I will still do this now, use lots of sticky notes, configure and arrange them how I want them, take a photograph, and then I'll sit there PowerPoint it, and it's so much quicker than trying to lots of text boxes on the screen.
Now, I'll add a technical question here. We're both graphics experts. What's your tool of choice when you're putting pen to paper or pencil to paper?
So I like a mechanical pencil, and I cannot remember the name of the one I've got at the moment. I think it's a pencil one, but I like a pencil. And then I've got...
You've got a range of pens on your table, things like that.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah. You're doing it proper. That's good to hear. Now, if you weren't a teacher, what would be that dream job?
Probably would be something to do with graphic design, I suspect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And okay, biggest career achievement to date? Most proud of?
I suppose writing the book, you know, having the opportunity to write the book is definitely up there, and that opportunity to just to learn and work with the past year has been, something that I'm very proud of and something that I won't take for granted.
What's your biggest hope for the future of the geography kind of curriculum?
And this is just, I suppose, again, my opinion. So I think... to have more quality geography spread, and I'm speaking about my region, but in my region, there's just a lack of just high quality geography teachers. And, you know, that would be my one wish, more high quality geography teachers in all schools, so that all students have got, an opportunity to learn the subject.
If you could graphic organise your school culture, give us a little visual what it would look like.
So I actually did do this.
Right, okay, fantastic.
I did this just recently, and I can't reveal all of the actual ethos, because we're kind of going through a transition at the moment. But it was very simple. In sort of like the centre, there was a circle, and then coming around the outside was each of the individual statements. Each of our individual kind of ethos and vision statements, very explicitly communicated, very terse, sharp, clear to understand.
Well, I'm glad I asked that question. So here's the question you've sowed the seed a couple of times. Who would you recommend I interview next and why?
So I had a think about this, and the one that sprung to mind was Jennifer Webb, who I believe is Funky Pedagogy on Twitter.
Yeah, she is. I know Jennifer, so get in touch, Jennifer, if you're listening. And why?
Well, I'll be honest, I haven't read a book yet. A new book on metacognition has just been released. So I'm really interested to read it, because, as I said, as we kind of ventured further into creating our book, we do begin to look at metacognition and how graphic organisers can be a servant to that metacognitive process. So I'm keen to kind of read the book and see what's learn from her.
Great. So Jennifer, if you're listening, I'm coming your way. Thank you. So David, where can people find out about you? Connect online, so blogs, things like that.
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter at Mr. Goodwin 23, which is a capital M and a capital G, and then my website, which probably will be changing very shortly, is at the moment it's a WordPress account, so it's mrgoodwin23.wordpress, I believe.
Okay, and if it changes by the time we put this out, we'll update that. So and finally, David, what do you hope to be your legacy?
I have a very simple kind of ethos for myself, which is, if there's a better way of doing something, show me. And I've never been one that's been precious about how I do things. And if I'm not stubborn in terms of, if someone introduces something to me and it makes sense and it's clearly going to work, I'm not going to go no, because it wasn't my idea. I'm just eager to learn and continue to grow and continue to learn from people. So why do I want to do that? Because I want to be the best version of myself for the young people that walk into my classroom every single day, and the young people that great. I influence.
So David, it's been fantastic to get absorbed into the world of graphics. That's right up my street, as you'll know. And I wish you every success with the book. And I can't wait to get a copy and be inspired and get back to my own sketch note. And I hasten to add, because it's a skill that I don't use enough. And it's been nice to talk about the knowledge and depth of that world. And I wish you every success with it. I suspect you'll be a very busy man once that's published, and your services, you know, that particularly for school leadership, your sketch note into school vision and culture is a very useful tool to translate, you know, those complex visions and theories into a nice nugget of information. So all the best with that. And thanks for your time.
Thank you. You know, thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, and keep up all the amazing hard work you're doing during the pandemic. And I know the life of ahead of year is very, very challenging. So, you know, again, I wish you all the best for that and hope people around you are to support you. And all the best wishes for the summer.
Thank you.
Thanks, David.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To continue the conversation, head over to www.teachertoolkit.co.uk and our social media channels to access all the links and resources mentioned on today's show. Why not share this with your colleagues and give them the gift of time, reduced workload, and increased impact? Until the next time, before you look after your students, look after yourself.